We left off last week. Dora did a great job of taking us into the exile. Basically, we had a few good kings in Judah, I believe. Like zero, right, in Israel. And then it ended up, you know, God told his people over and over again that if you choose other gods and other nations and what they stand for, I'm going to give you to them. I'm going to give you over to them. And he does that. He follows through and he gives them over, and he allows this king named Nebuchadnezzar. Looks like a bottle of vodka over there. Interesting. No. I was like, wow.
It's not even
cool. I mean,
great Jesus is water.
I got the bottle.
Great. I got mine right here, so you know.
Ready to be back, Pat?
Right. Okay, now that's tracks. King Nebuchadnezzar, he was the king of Babylon. He was king of Babylon, right? Powerful king, came in, he killed a lot of folks, and then took a lot of prisoners. And he took them back to Babylon with him. And from that point, a lot of the Jews got spread out over a large region, okay? I'm going to read this passage, and we're just going to kind of jump in, see where it goes. This is in 2 Chronicles, the end of 2 Chronicles, chapter 36. It says, "The Lord, the God of their ancestors, sent word to them through his messengers again and again, because he had pity on his people and his dwelling and on his dwelling place. But they mocked God's messengers, despised his words, and scoffed at his prophets until the wrath..." That's just sad that they did that. "That the wrath of the Lord was aroused against his people, and there was no remedy. He brought up against them the king of the Babylonians, who killed their young men with the sword in the sanctuary, and did not spare young men or young women, the elderly or the infirm. God gave them all into the hands of Nebuchadnezzar. He carried to Babylon all the articles from the temple of God, both large and small, and the treasures of the Lord's temple, and the treasures of the king and his officials. They set fire to the God's temple and broke down the wall of Jerusalem. They burned all the palaces and destroyed everything of value there. He carried into exile to Babylon the remnant." That's the title of tonight's class, The Remnant. "Carried the remnant who escaped from the sword." So those who survived his attack. "And they became servants to him and his successors until the kingdom of Persia came to power. And the land," it was like the land was happy that the whole place had gotten sacked, because it had just gotten raped year after year after year, right? The land hadn't been given a rest in a long, long time. "But the land enjoyed its Sabbath rest. All the time of its desolation it rested, until the 70 years were completed in fulfillment of the word of the Lord spoken by Jeremiah." So, there we go. The exile has been executed. And we turn to Ezra. Chapter 1. And, you know, I find this interesting, the timing of this, where, you know, we're talking about in this series that God has chosen a people, right? And there's something to this. I mean, just this week, this is, would have been about, we're about 2,500 years out from Ezra right now. And just this week, all over every major newspaper in the United States, at least the four or five that I've seen, have Israel's prime minister on the front page. It's a big deal that the leader of this little sandbox over in the Middle East is coming to speak to the Congress of the most powerful nation in the world. And why is this visit so important? It's important from my little knowledge that I have because Israel's security is being threatened once again. That's nuts. We're talking about this tonight. 2,500 years ago. Just 70 years ago, 75 years ago, we had a man by the name of Adolf Hitler who was trying to completely annihilate this people again. And now it's nuclear worries, right? Ezra chapter 1. Cyrus, King Cyrus, he was the king of Persia. Very powerful king comes in and he defeats Nebuchadnezzar, okay? So he takes over all of Nebuchadnezzar's land and then some. And in chapter 1, verse 2, we're going to pick up reading there just for a second. The Lord, the God of heaven, and this is King Cyrus speaking, okay? God has put it in his heart to rebuild the temple in Jerusalem. The Lord, the God of heaven, has given me all the kingdoms of the earth, and he has appointed me to build a temple for him at Jerusalem in Judah. Any of his people among you may go up to Jerusalem in Judah and build the temple of the Lord, the God of Israel, the God who is in Jerusalem, and may their God be with them. And in any locality where survivors may now be living, the people are to provide them with silver and gold, with goods and livestock, and with freewill offerings for the temple of God in Jerusalem. And so he sends out this message saying, I mean, this is great. This is 50 years, I want to say. Yeah, 50 years after, this is like in 536. So the fall of Jerusalem and the sacking of everything that Nebuchadnezzar did, that was in 586. I believe this is in 536. So 50 years have passed. And now there's this king who's taken over and he wants to do some. The kindness of God has entered his heart, and he spends a lot of energy and money and resources getting the word out to all of his provinces. And I gave you a nice little map here. This is the Persian Empire. You look in your deal there. I mean, it kind of stretches a good long ways, you know, from like Libya all the way to India. And up to like modern day Turkey and places that I don't even know. I'm not great on geography. But it's a big, big kingdom. This is not like Michigan. This is bigger than that. You know? But this is a big deal to him. And I find that interesting that it's a big deal to him. That he makes this, you know, he really, really wants this 60 by 60 building to be built, 60 foot by 60 foot building built in this little know-nothing town called Jerusalem in his kingdom, right? So much so he sends out, so anyways, this is happening, and the people of God hear about it, and chapter 2, we hear that those who had it on their heart, those who wanted, those who heard this and wanted to go back and build the temple, left and did it. Left and started heading back to, from wherever they were at, to Jerusalem. In 2 verse 64, the whole company that made their way back to Jerusalem was 42,360 people. Okay, besides their 7,337 male and female slaves, and they also had 200 male and female singers, gotta have singers, and they had 736 horses, 245 mules, 435 camels, and 6,720 donkeys. You know, you do a lot with donkeys. That is a very, very small amount of people. I mean, that's not like 20, but that's when we go back to the time when David was king. Just when he did his little census that he should not have done, just the fighting men were 1,300,000 physically able fighting men. That's just the men who are able to fight. 1.3 million. 42,000 are heading back to Jerusalem right now. And the first thing they did when they got to Jerusalem was they built an altar. Now, I want to go back to the big deal that this is. Why? I want to throw this out to you. Why was it such a big deal? This is 50 years later. People have already, they're planted, they have lives of their own. They have kids now that don't know anything about Jerusalem. You know, why would they risk their lives, their security, everything, in order to make the journey back to Jerusalem? Who knows what they're even going to find there when they get there? Why would they do that to build this temple again?
It was commanded by God.
It was commanded by God?
No, they were volunteers.
This is all volunteer.
They must have had some knowledge of God and what he had done in the past for their mm-hmm. people.
Okay.
In order to make that voluntary.
All right. I mean, the king kind of made it sound voluntary. Anybody who would like to go and do that, you're free to do that. You know, and not only that, but we want to do... Like, I want your neighbors to give you money and animals and whatever it's going to take. You know, just goodwill offerings to get you all the way there. Why would they? Why was this a big deal to them? And then I'm going to pose something to you. What was the temple?
It says too that in Ezra 1 that the Spirit of God stirred them up and
okay.
wanted and gave them the desire to head back. And I think the temple is God's dwelling place. So by
right.
going and building the temple, it's essentially saying that God's coming back to be with them.
Right. The temple was where they met God. The temple was the presence of God. And the temple, like, the temple was their connection with God. It was God's house, essentially. And... These were people who did not have an identity. We get asked, well, who are you? Who do you belong to? We're Americans. Yeah. You know? They were essentially without the temple, without their God, and they connect the two, they were nobodies. They were nomads. They were sold out to whoever that they were with. There was so much shame involved. And this was an opportunity to their only hope for having, for being a somebody again, for having, for becoming a nation again, was to get back to that plot of land that God had promised to them. We're so dumbfounded by what an important piece of property that little sandbox is over there. And this is a piece of it. I mean, people connect that, and in this case, the temple, to their identity and their connection with God. Yes.
I'm surprised that the Persian Emperor Cyrus didn't have it located somewhere in the center of his empire. It's way off to the west.
To the west,
Of where most of his holdings are.
Yeah.
It's way, way off. That's interesting, too.
Yeah.
But he was moved like the rest. Like, God talked to him, too. I mean, mm-hmm. He didn't just do that on his own. That was the words I was looking for. God stirred into people's minds.
Right.
When you get something in your mind, it comes to you in a vision. The difference between a dream and a vision. A vision is so real and so you can touch it, almost taste it. And when you get that inside of you, when the Lord runs through you like that,
mm-hmm.
there's no stopping you. That the temple was taken away from them. It was taken away from them, and they did wrong, and they were shamed. And now this is a way for them to bring their people back together again.
Right.
And this is happening still to this day, just like you said.
Yeah.
I have a lot of Jewish friends that are Christians. They're Christians, mm-hmm. but they're Jewish. And they still want to go back. That's
right.
Where, that's their mm-hmm. dead bearings. We're working so we can go back to Jerusalem.
Mm-hmm.
So we can go back.
And there's something also with these different kings, where they, if you listen to what they're saying, they feel as though, and I think that they're driven by this feeling that there's this fear of the God of heaven and earth, of this Jewish God. They've heard of him, or they've had a vision, or whatever. God has put it on their heart that if they align themselves with this little nobody people, they'll be blessed for it. That their nations will benefit militarily, will benefit economically, if they bless this little pocket of special weird people.
They're unique people. They're not weird.
We're all weird.
I'm unique.
Okay. You're unique. I'm weird. But I find it, you know, interesting. This first wave of people, the 42,000, they get to Jerusalem. The first thing they do is set up an altar. They want to get things going, and so they start the fire going, and they do morning sacrifices and evening sacrifices daily to the Lord. They don't start on the temple for 2 years. So they get there. They're not all in Jerusalem. They're in towns in the surrounding area. They settle. They make their homes. They build houses. They set up shop. They get their jobs going, whatever. And then 2 years later, they start on the temple. And immediately, if you read these stories, some of the most interesting pieces to me is that when you have this group of hungry people who they're given the opportunity to get their identity back, they're given the opportunity to have God back, and they say yes, and they go for it. And in both cases, there is opposition that comes their way. And how many of us can relate to that? Have you ever been in a point where you know that God wants you to do something? You know he wants you to have a breakthrough in some part of your life? And you put your foot forward to do it, to do what he's calling you to do, and all of your fears start coming at you, or things that you weren't even expecting start coming at you. Things start going wrong. You walk out and there's two flat tires, you know. Discouragement sets in. Well, this actually happened to these people. It's just neat to see how they just, you know, how they just fought through it. In chapter 4 of Ezra, we have their first wave of opposition. And this group of people were just like, it's just because they were Jews trying to rebuild their temple. And they write this letter to King Artaxerxes, saying, and this is in verse 12 of chapter 4, from your servants in the Trans-Euphrates, the king should know that the people who came up to us from you have gone to Jerusalem and are rebuilding that rebellious and wicked city. They are restoring the walls and repairing the foundations. Furthermore, the king should know that if this city is built and its walls are restored, no more taxes, tribute, or duty will be paid, and eventually the royal revenues will suffer. Now, since we are under obligation to the palace and it is not proper for us to see the king dishonored, we are sending this message to inform the king so that a search may be made in the archives of your predecessors. In these records, you will find that this city is a rebellious city, troublesome to kings and provinces, a place with a long history of sedition. That is why this city was destroyed. And we inform the king that if this city is built and its walls are restored, you will be left with nothing in the Trans-Euphrates region. King Artaxerxes gets this letter. He goes and he checks his records, and sure enough, the records show that they are a rebellious city, that they are kind of, Jerusalem has a reputation of being a troublemaking town and doing their own thing. And so he stops construction. They go in there, they get the authorization from King Artaxerxes, and they stop them with force building the temple. And so years go by with nothing going on in the temple. Until we have you've heard of the two prophets Haggai and Zechariah. They wrote books in the Bible as well, or little books in the Bible in the tail end of the Old Testament, and they are from this period as well. And they went to the people, and they went to the two guys who had originally started the work, Joshua and, what was that other guy's name?
Zerubbabel.
Thank you. And basically, God was telling him through these guys. He was saying, you know, hey, you guys have all, I really admire your houses that you built for yourself, and you're all sitting there chilling in your houses, and the God that you serve is homeless. I don't have a house. And he gave them the charge to start building again. And so they did. They started, they were convicted. They started building the temple again. And opposition again when they started building again. And by this time, there was another king. This is King Darius, who was in charge. And so they sent a letter to King Darius saying, you know, is this authorized? And check your records on this. Did King Cyrus actually give these people permission to build this? And Darius checks his records, and he sends him back this response. And I just think this is a really, really funny response, powerful response. In verse 3 of chapter 6 in Ezra, in the first year of King Cyrus, the king issued a decree concerning the temple of God in Jerusalem. Let the temple be rebuilt as a place to present sacrifices. So he goes down, he says yes, basically, that Cyrus did And then in verse 8, it says, moreover, now this is King Darius, moreover, I hereby decree that you are to do for these elders of the Jews in the construction of this house of God. Their expenses are to be fully paid out of the royal treasury from the revenues of the Trans-Euphrates. So this isn't their money, this is your money. So that the work will not stop. Whatever is needed, young bulls, rams, male lambs for burnt offerings to the God of heaven, and wheat, salt, wine, we all know we need lots of that, wine and olive oil, as requested by the priests in Jerusalem, must be given them daily without fail, so that they may offer sacrifices pleasing to the God of heaven and pray for the well-being of the king and his sons. See, he's getting something out of this. We're going to give them all this. They're going to pray for us, and we get blessed for it. Furthermore, I decree that if anyone defies this edict, a beam is to be pulled from their house and they're to be impaled on it. And for this crime, their house is to be made a pile of rubble. May God, who has caused his name to dwell there, overthrow any king or people who lifts a hand to change this decree or destroy the temple in Jerusalem. I, Darius, have decreed it. Let it be carried out with diligence. If I was a Jew, I'd be like, yeah! Woohoo! Yeah. It's pretty good news if you're getting that letter back. They thought that they were going to get another, you know, another letter giving them permission to go and put a stop to this building, and in turn they got this letter from Darius, which is completely different than the first one.